Welcome to the Male Fertility Podcast, a podcast designed to help, support and educate men as they go through their own fertility struggles. Hi, I'm Kieran.
And I'm Sean. And we'll do that by sharing our stories of what we went through, as well as having guests share their knowledge and experience. Right, let's get into today's episode.
Hello and welcome to a third episode of the Male Fertility Podcast. Today we are talking all things sperm. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you feeling with your bigger microphone?
I feel in control.
Yeah. What was it you said just before we hit record? You said, I feel more secure.
More secure, more confident with my big microphone, yeah.
Brilliant. And the ever-changing plant behind you is slightly different today.
Well, it's changed. It's the same plant. I just move it around.
Nice.
And then I've brought in a bit of nice smelly stuff in that scented thing in the corner. Otherwise, that generally on top of there has Sebi's keyboard, and it looks horrendous where he just smashes and plays. He's learning the piano. So, I just don't think it would look proper in the back of a podcast.
Well, I'm sure that nice smelly stuff creates a better ambiance.
Yeah, it does. It puts me in the mood to talk.
Let's put it like that. Decent. Well, that's what we're here for.
Indeed we are, man. Indeed we are. But before we start, like, how's everything?
Mad. I think this is the first episode we've recorded since we've put the pod out, isn't it?
Yeah, it has, yeah.
Yeah, we had the first two in the bag before episode one went live. So, yeah, it's the way in which it was received has been brilliant. Everything's gone crazy. As we had planned, we tied in the release with Fertility Awareness Week, which was an incredibly busy week. And it's just been nonstop, really. And, you know, it's been great. It's all about getting the word out there and raising awareness. But at the same time, I thought my head was going to spin off at one point. And I've been neglecting the gym a little bit, which I went in today. And it's amazing how much difference 2 weeks makes, actually. I'm feeling the after effects already. So I think tomorrow I might be struggling to walk a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree, mate. It's been a busy 2 weeks. And people are listening. So thank you so much for all the comments, kind comments we've had, all the positivity, people sharing it. We really do appreciate it. I think we were both taken back by how it was just taken up, wasn't it? We had so much contact for so many people. In a weird way, that's why we did it. We wanted to start this conversation, but I don't think we were really prepared for how busy we'd be and how much people would really engage. Of course, we wanted it, but we were actually amazed and so pleased that so many people were taking so much from it.
Yeah, I echo that completely. Other than crazy busy, everything okay.
And the family all right?
Yeah, absolutely. At my end, yeah, good.
Good.
Both sleeping, so it's all good.
So that's a positive, man. That's a positive. Yeah. I've kind of been up and down with, like, just not feeling too good the last 2 weeks. So I think I am, like, the 2 weeks before we released that first episode, you were similar. And I've had 2 weeks of up and down, but I'm finally back on my feet and feeling 100%. So I just can't wait to get on with this today. It's going to be a great conversation, isn't it?
Yeah, we're both really excited about this one, aren't we? Because it's the first one. Obviously, the first two episodes were about our individual stories, and this one now is actually like more of a deeper dive into male infertility or male fertility issues. And like you said, all things sperm. And let's get cracking, I suppose.
Well, I suppose we better talk about sperm and kind of just the state it's in a way, if you know what I mean. It's there's so much research supporting the fact that sperm is on the decline, yet we're not really talking about it as a society, which completely baffles me.
No, you're right. It's we both talked about it before, didn't we? It's that this is not a new thing. And actually the research shows that for 50 years, sperm health has been on the decline, sperm numbers, sperm counts, but the conversation still isn't happening.
It's shocking. I think there's one research paper, I'd have to see if I can find it. I didn't read it for this kind of preparing for this podcast, but I've read it in the past. It's like 1% since 1970. There's been a decline in fertility in men, in sperm count. And that's absolutely shocking. Like, it's literally cut in half in 50 years. And yeah, obviously, it's 1% of the total that's there. So if it's 20 million, it will go down 1%. And then the next year, it's 20 million, 1% of that. But it's still deemed as 1% of year, 1% a year that it's declining. And it's just, it's a real shock that it's taken this long to kind of be noticed. I've definitely noticed in the last couple of years, it's becoming more of a talking point in terms of male fertility. But the evidence has been there for years.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd read that it's since the 70s, so it declined by up to 50% in total.
Yeah.
So I think in the 70s, total counts were around 100 million. Now we're looking at kind of between 40 and 50, or 40 and 60 maybe. But it's really makes for really stark reading. And, we're in that. And obviously you and I, as we've discussed previously, we've experienced it. But what worryingly it is a more kind of very worrying stat for people moving forward and the younger generation is that all arrows are pointing to the fact that it's going to get worse and sperm counts keep getting lower.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the big things, isn't it? This isn't a problem that's going away. It is here. And we need to address it. I read an article the other day, and it was talking about, I think I didn't send it to you, but I sent a picture of a very famous person who's very interested in the fertility world in terms of Mr. Elon Musk to you, and about the article that he was linked to and talking about actually, like, if we don't sort this out, you know, it will end up in dire straits for the human race. And it's true. Like, in the end, it runs out, doesn't it? Fertility will decline to a point that the world is suddenly infertile altogether. And obviously, that's not going to happen around the corner, but it will happen in years to come if we don't start addressing it now. And the reasons why it's occurring. But there's so many reasons. And you would have found this when you started your journey, your experience, shall we say. Sorry, I used the J word, mate.
Straight in. That's the 10 minutes and you've gone in hard of it.
But you look for reasons, and there's so many reasons why. So many possibilities. It's near impossible to pinpoint why has it happened. You know, why is this happening? I think I always describe it as every single reason is part of a puzzle.
Yeah.
And you have to address each part of the puzzle to get a full picture. And you never know what piece of that puzzle is going to complete it. It can sometimes be a pure guessing game.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. And like you said, that there's not one reason, that there's a multitude of reasons, and some of which that I've read about being the environment. So an increase in pollution, an increase in microplastics in our diet, actually, and in our water, for example. Both of those are damaging sperm health.
Yeah.
And then I think the biggest problem, I'd imagine, it's got to be towards modern lifestyles, because we are now in an age of convenience where we have information, unlimited information in our pockets, which actually is potentially another thing, you know, phones being near balls and laptops on laps, etc. But we also live in a world where if we want food and we're hungry, you go into a supermarket, the easiest things to buy are all the highly processed foods, which are right there, right by the tills, shiny packets, like chocolate crisps, sandwiches that have been produced, which you don't know what's in there, like probably high sugar and salt content, I'd imagine. And all that is definitely going to have an impact on sperm health.
I think it's really interesting, the discussion about supermarkets, because that's a perfect example of how our lifestyles have changed so much drastically in the last even just 50 years. I mean, you know that I loved to read all things like nutrition and exercise. And something that I've really become aware of is there's no coincidence between the drastic change in our diets and the drastic increase in like chronic health issues, not just fertility, but also things like cancer, diabetes, and all these things that we're kind of looking for a cure for, when, you know, it could be argued that the cure in front of our eyes is sorting out our lifestyles and what we're actually exposing ourselves to as a human race, not just as an individual. Because, you know, you can do you can try and do your best as an individual, and you can be very specific about what you eat. But as you said, it's near impossible to avoid drinking water out the tap and taking in those microplastics. But microplastics are used in everything. Like we are consuming them all over the place. I think it was Mel Brown that mentioned in the Channel 4 documentary that we consume a credit card size of plastic every week.
Yeah,
like that's like I expected a year, not a week.
Yeah,
like that's shocking, isn't it?
Yeah, massively. And I'm actually looking into getting a water filter at home at the moment to go on the tap because, obviously my fertility journey is, hey, there it is again. My fertility story has that ship has sailed, but it's not too late to change our general health and especially for my kids.
Yeah.
And it's obviously, like we mentioned, the plastics in there, but there's concerns around like pesticides washing into the water stream and pollution. I think I've read that like hormones often are getting flushed into the water system as well. So, but it's all very concerning. It makes for shocking reading. And it's like that you mentioned about the change in diets and like the nutrients that would have been in our grandparents' food are so much lesser now in our food. And not to mention the modern like mass produced food and like pesticides that are used on the crops. So for example, now you go into a supermarket, you see organic this, organic that. Well, in our grandparents' generation, that wasn't organic food, it was just food. So there's been a massive change. And I think people, if they are struggling with fertility or just across the board, but you should probably take a little bit more precaution about what you're consuming, because it can have a massive impact on things like inflammation as well, which again can impact fertility.
Yeah, I mean, I remember being at school and the cheesy term being used, you are what you eat. Mm. And as I've got older, I've realized it's true.
Yeah.
It really is true. Like, you wouldn't put, you know, if you've got a petrol car, you don't put diesel in it because it doesn't run. You know, you might get halfway down the block, but in the end, it breaks down, you know. And it's the same for our bodies. Obviously, it's not, you know, take away from the fact of our bodies are amazing organisms and we're able to, like, it's able to filter quite a lot.
Mm.
It does it, like, amazingly. But if you do that for 30 years of your life, 40 years of your life, in the end, that filtering system, you know, the kidneys and the liver start to get damaged. Yeah. And then that's where hormones are affected, because they're key in development of hormones.
Yeah. And obviously a major hormone for men being testosterone, and that can get dragged around with a high sugar diet, for example. Your other hormones and blood sugar is going all over the place with that. And then guess what? So your testosterone, and you need that to be in a good fertile situation, and it has an intrinsic link to sperm health and sperm. So, but like, to, you know, you mentioned about a car. So, you know, we get one body. And if we were to, when we start our lives or start our driving kind of age, and then someone was to give you a car and to say, this is the only car you're going to get for the rest of your life, you would look after it. You would put the best fuel in it. You would exercise it, so to speak, and take care and wouldn't rag it. So why do we do that of our bodies?
It's bizarre, isn't it? And I have these conversations with clients about actually like the value of working with people who have that little bit of extra knowledge, like myself, in terms of PT wise, and exercise. Like, you'd put a lot more money into your, people literally take more care of their car and their house, which is important. Like, you need a house to live in, than the body you walk around in your whole life. Like, you can't get a second one. I can get a new house, I can get a new car, but actually your body is one of the only things you get one of. You get one chance.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's a good point to come on to, actually. So with your PT work, what interventions do you tell people to make with lifestyle in general? So, for example, like hot tubs, do you give advice around that?
Yeah, so things like hot tubs and hot baths, like, you know, you want to be avoiding them, because like they'll be like really just heating up your scrotum and damaging the sperm that's in it. But I try and give advice that fits the individual, because some people, you know, have a good diet. They are doing everything that they perceive to be correct and right, which is. But then through conversations, I might get that, you know, they've got a bit of a disturbed sleeping pattern. And you and me both know the importance of sleep for the development of testosterone. So, yeah, it will be like embedding, you know, sleep hygiene, as they call it, into their lives, and gradually building up the habits that will allow them to, you know, rubber stamp sleep as something that's positive in their life, rather than being something that is negatively affecting them, which could in turn, it's not always the way, but it could in turn, you know, affect their fertility. So it's very much an individual kind of process in that way. But people are aware, mate. People are aware of these things. It's just incredibly difficult in a modern world to tick every box.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's and like you mentioned, the modern world, and that's yet another factor is our more sedentary lifestyles we live now, like kind of office-based work, for example, where we're sitting down a lot. And you mentioned overheating the scrotum. Well, the whole point of the fact that why it hangs low is to try and keep the balls at about 2 degrees cooler than body temperature, because sperm need a cooler environment to thrive.
Yeah.
So when we're sat down at desks and they're nestled in between our hot thighs, that's not good. And you're getting like hours and hours worth of them getting heated up, where again, in previous generations, people would do more active work, more manual work, and were more active in general. So it is important to, where you can, you know, depending on your, what you do for a job, but just to keep active, keep cooler, and keep moving, really.
Well, I know we're going to talk about like lifestyles later on in the pod episodes, but I think it's important just to kind of take from this conversation that, you know, be mindful of what you're doing, because the world isn't set up to be fertility friendly. You know, it's all about fast consumption. We live, especially the Western world, we live in a place where if we want it, we can get it. You know, Amazon's a perfect example of that, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I wanted a new microphone and it came the next day because I had mic envy.
Exactly.
But, you know, you don't have to think about it. It's just there, and it's the same with food. So taking your time to think about actually what can I do to just kind of eliminate some of that and improve my sperm health, because that's what it comes down to, isn't it? Like that fertility for men is, what can I do to improve or try to improve my sperm health?
Yeah, yeah, you're right. And it, like anything, it comes down to awareness, and that's why we're doing this. It's why we've been banging the drum now on our separate accounts now for what, like 3 years or so.
Yeah,
and you've been to bloody Everest to raise awareness about it. We've both been in national press, so you know we're doing it. It's slowly, you know, there's some other good guys in the game, so it's all about us all rowing in the same direction. And is that even a saying? Pulling in the same direction.
I mean, pulling in the same direction, that'd be it.
Yeah,
we can roll that way if you want, mate. I don't mind. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, going back to like the social media side of things, yeah, we've both really kind of banged the drum there, haven't we, mate? Like, I've been involved in BBC articles. We've both been on Channel 4, they won Steph's Packed Lunch and talking about it on there. And it's just, we talked about it before we came on air, the fact that it's still shocking that despite people really talking about it, there's no real, there is awareness, but it's not been taken seriously enough yet. It needs to be taken seriously because, as you said, it's declining. It's not going to stop declining. So unless we want the inevitable to happen and it to get to such a point that that's it, it's done, we've got to take it seriously.
Absolutely.
I've just got one more little note, mate, is that fact if people want to kind of read more about this, there's a great book called, let me just check my notes here. It's called The Countdown, and it's by Shanna Swan and Stacey, I think it's Colino. But yeah, it's called The Countdown, and it's fantastic. It kind of talks about the environment and how it's having a negative impact on fertility for men and for women, and just kind of how things that we should be aware of. And it talks real, it is scientific, it's real factual, but it's just such a good eye-opener. If you just want to know a little bit more, have a little bit more understanding of kind of direction that we are going in and things that you can do to maybe assist your fertility. It's a fantastic book. I definitely recommend reading it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, mate. That's a good shout. Thank you. And I'm sure that will help loads of people. So let's discuss really the process of finding out like how you, what you do if you have suspicion that there's an issue and how you go about getting a sperm test.
I think it's different for everyone, isn't it? Like there is a process to go. If you search it on the NHS, it will tell you there's certain tick boxes you need to kind of tick. So for example, you need to be trying for 6 months without protection. Yeah, that's kind of like the biggest one, isn't it? That's what they're looking for. Also, they're looking for previously diagnosed health issues that might kind of impact your fertility. So it won't put you to the front of the queue, but it will make you, the doctor's more aware of you, shall we say. They'll take more interest in you if you've got something that's kind of already flagged up. But I think once again, before we came on, we had that quick chat about how your experience and my experience was very different. Because when I actually sat down in front of the consultant for the first time, I had no awareness at all of my infertility. And there's that big part of me that feels like I should never have got that far without finding that out. Like Jen was in the system for quite a long time, but because she, had polycystic ovaries, it was just deemed it was because she wasn't, having regular cycles. So when it actually came to me, I had missed the assessment bit that I should have kind of gone through, the process I should have gone through, and ended up with a real shock. Where for you, it was a different experience, wasn't it, mate?
Yeah. Well, it's and that that you just described there is part of the problem with the fertility world and the kind of the woman-centric testing that we've seen in the past. And hopefully that is now starting to turn a little bit because there is becoming a lot more awareness, certainly within medical world, of just how much male fertility infertility is out there, and how attributable we are to that slice of the pie, so to speak. And but for example, in my case, see, I knew that I'd had mumps when I was 22, so we went and said that to the doctor. But interestingly, he still sent my wife a test as well. And you could absolutely. It's the right thing to do, and it's prudent. But on conversely, you weren't sent for tests when you and Jen both went. So it shows how disproportionate it can be. In your case, it was like, okay, focus on Jen. You weren't referred for a long, long time, whereas it was literally the first thing that when I said it, he was like, okay, I'm gonna send you for a sperm analysis, and so yeah, it does vary widely, and obviously there are some stories of people being sent away from the doctors because they haven't been trying for X amount of time, whatever that magic time is, who knows? I've heard like 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, but ultimately, you know, when people are trying, that is like we did, you're taking the ovulation test, you know when's the optimum time to be trying, and then you get that heartbreak again every month on month of it not happening. So it's about being your own advocate, and if you feel that there is a problem, definitely go into the GPs. And but also now there are, certainly for men, there's other avenues of testing, such as Exceed, our sponsors. But like there are other ways to start taking control of your fertility earlier. That certainly wasn't an option when we were going for it, either you or I.
No, and do you know what? I think I would have been happier kind of doing that initial test at home, just to see what was going on. I mean, we'll get on shortly about our own experiences and, you know, they're humorous now, some of it, but actually that first initial test is really, really intimidating. It is quite scary. You don't know what to expect. You don't know if you're doing it right. Something that you've done for the last, 15 years. Am I doing it right to do it in a pot? I don't know. What do I have to do? Like, it's bizarre what the thought process that goes through your head. Now, I actually did. I asked the guys from XE to send me a home sample just because I wanted to see what it was like and how it worked and everything. And it completely different experience. Obviously, I'm in a completely different part of my life and that now, and I'm not searching for answers. I'm seeing what it's like. And, you know, it gave me some really interesting results. Let me just get it up on my phone for a second, buddy. But I can definitely see how for your initial consultation, like your initial kind of just getting to know what's going on, where you are in the ballpark, do you need to go and get additional, you know, investigation? Right, a home test kit, fantastic. And I really do wish I'd had it when I was experiencing that.
Well, let's talk about that experience, and then we'll come on to what the results can look like after. I think.
Yeah, sure.
We
can do it afterwards.
What's really funny, though, it cracks me up, is that we're just openly talking about this now, going out to however many people, and like certainly I know that my wife will listen to it, but whenever she tries to quiz me about having a cheeky tug, like I just completely shut it down. I'm like, you know, I don't talk about that.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, don't know what you're on about. And so, there you go, eh? It's all about awareness.
It is about awareness. And, you know, it's something that is very, it's a natural thing. And, you know, it can't be avoided, shall we say. But when it came to actually giving my first sample, I remember just being absolutely terrified. And it was one of the worst experiences of my life. And I'll tell you about it. So it was in, I had to go, because obviously you have to get the sample there in a certain amount of time. That's, you get a letter through from the doctors and it will say, deliver your sample here at this time within this time period of giving the sample. And it ranges between half an hour and an hour. You've got to get it there definitely before the hour. So I remember waking up in the morning, and we live 40 minutes away from the hospital. And this is when we lived in Sussex. And I had this conversation with Jen. I was like, what do we do? Like, what if we get stuck in traffic and we don't get it there? Because that was completely possible. Down into Brighton, it gets very busy. So after a conversation and a lot of convincing from Jen, she was like, you're going to have to go to the hospital and do it. I was like, what, the hospital? She was like, yeah, you're going to have to do it there. So we got to the hospital, and I'll be honest, I'm shitting myself a bit, because I'm about to, you know, do the deed in a hospital, public place. What if this goes wrong? What if someone, like, I don't know, reports me? Like, I had all these image things going through my head. Anyway, we found eventually we found like a group of toilets. So there was loads of toilets there because that was one of the things I was really kind of key about. I didn't want it just to be one toilet because then people would always come. They'd be like, if there was a couple, it means I could get away with being in one for a bit longer. They can use the other. So that was a first criteria ticked. The only downside is it was literally across the way or the corridor from like the cafe. So I could hear everything, what was going on.
So you went into a normal toilet to give us your sperm sample?
Yeah, a normal toilet.
That's mad.
There wasn't any facilities. There was no facilities.
Oh, my word.
It was a normal. This is the first time I've done it. Right?
Oh, my.
And it gets worse than that. So Jen was like, look, I'm going to give you your space because she could see I was anxious. Like, I wasn't in a good place at that moment in terms of my anxieties were all over the place. So she's like, I'm going to go for a coffee or your hot chocolate. And I can see the toilet from here. All right. So if anything happens, I can come and intervene and blah, blah, blah. So I was like, that's fine. So I went in the toilet and this is going back like 10 years, isn't it? So everything was on 3G then. So I couldn't have any assistance from my phone because phones weren't as advanced then. So I had to like try and do it just off the bat. Anyway, like I was in there for ages, right? I was doing it. And then just as I was kind of getting comfortable, the door starts going, right? And and then I can hear this old woman outside talking to her husband. And she's like, and she started putting her bags down. She's like, I think the door's stuck. And then what I didn't realize was that the lock, like, didn't show that it was locked. It was so it was still white. So she's pulling out this door. You can imagine the scene inside. So I just completely lost it. I, you know, pulled myself up. I was like, I can't do it. And I walked out and I walked into Jen. I was like, I can't do it. Anyway, Jen's in complete stitches, sat drinking this like cup of like cocoa, whatever it was. And she was like, I just watched all that unravel. It was hilarious. I was like, you're supposed to be supporting me.
Brilliant.
But that was the very first sample I did. So what happened eventually is we went for a walk and then I went back and we're in the same toilet. We did it. I delivered it. Like I didn't really know where to deliver it. That's a weird thing, isn't it, mate? Like you walk towards the slot and you put it in and then, but you can hear someone collect it and it's like they collect it straight away. And you're thinking, someone's just collected a pot of my sperm. That's a bit weird. So you walk off hoping that no one's seen you, even though everyone knows why you're there because it's in the deepest, darkest part of the hospital that you have to go down 26 flights of stairs to get to and no one goes down there unless they're going down there. Do you know what I mean? It's like in the most awkward place. And then that's when I got my... at that point, I didn't know there was anything wrong. So I was just really anxious about doing this sample. So we got the results from that and they said, we need you to do another one. Now, this is the worst one. I've got three stories to tell you. This is the second one. And so we went back to Brighton Hospital, same process, same toilet. And this time, just as I was getting to the point of, you know, about to deliver the sample, the fire alarm went off.
No joke.
And they were evacuating the hospital. So I had to put them up again and I had to go and evacuate. Luckily, I hadn't got to the point of no return. I went back after it was all sorted and I managed to do it. And I said to Jen, I'm never going in that toilet again.
Yeah.
Never. Like I've been in there twice. Giving a semen sample, having a tug when I don't want to, and two things have gone wrong.
Brilliant.
But that was probably the worst one in terms of like in a public place, but also at Bourne Hospital. And this is the one I started to tell you at the fertility show. And you said, don't tell me, wait till the pod. Yeah. So you, like, what I've realized is, and this is a really weird thing, that you and me have had a wank in the same room. Because I've been to one. I think,
I always knew we had a special connection, my friend.
So basically, I thought, I can do this now. And like, I sustained for like 4 days. And I was like, I'm ready for it. So we drove all the way to Bournehall. Just by this time, we'd moved to Bedfordshire. So we couldn't do the sample because it was like 50 minute drive. So I had to do it there. Booked a slot. This lady took me up, and it was the most bizarre thing. She took me up, and just as she went in, she said to me, "If you need a hand or need anything, just let me know." And I thought, that's the weirdest thing you'd ever say to someone. But I think she was just like, "If you need anything, just let us know." But it's the how I read it, like walking in, I was like, "Oh, I don't need a hand. I'll be fine."
For tips.
Anyway, I went in and I started doing what you're doing. And then I got to the point of no return. And I went up down and realized I hadn't taken the lid off the sample box.
Mate. Oh my God, that's brilliant.
So I had to I scrambled the lid off.
Because that first part of the sample is the most important bit as well.
Scrambled the lid off, made an absolute shit show of it and managed to scoop some into it.
Oh my God.
And that's how that happened, mate.
Yeah, some interesting results on that one. Not just looking at. Well,
I went back.
Counts. Probably had a bit of fluff there.
I went back and I put it, gave the sample in. And basically, I was called back to give another sample.
Yeah, not surprised.
So, I had. My first, what I would call three major semen samples were basically an old lady and her husband trying to break into the toilet I was in, the fire alarm going off, and then I forgot to take the lid off.
It's quite incredible.
It's quite a series of things. And let's just say from that point on, there was a specific thing. I went through everything. I went in. First thing I did, take the lid off. First thing, because I had that weird sink you have to wash your balls in. Do you remember that? It looks like they've got it out of a hair salon or something where you put your head in it. I sorted everything out, and as long as everything was ready, I was ready. I didn't rush into it.
Preparation is key.
Yeah, I know that's, I've kind of made a bit of a jolly about funny stories there, but the anxiety for that is real.
Well, I'm going to coin and trademark this phrase, wanxiety.
Is that what we're going for?
Yeah.
Wanxiety.
Wanxiety.
I think that's
get it into the Oxford English Dictionary or maybe even Urban Dictionary.
Urban Dictionary.
It's probably in there, to be fair.
Let's rewind and talk about how I felt the day of that first kind of sample. I was really anxious. I remember not eating. I remember not knowing the rules of being able to do something like that in a public toilet. That's how I was thinking. I was like, what if something goes wrong here? I've got the anxieties of that. What if I can't do it? What if I post it in the wrong letterbox? All these things. I'm like,
pigeonhole for their internal correspondence. So I think they got a hate campaign or a stalker.
Just
someone's flipping pot of spunk. I came down to grab a fax.
It's a real thing. And you've talked to guys, I've talked to guys, that anxiety, that wanxiety is real.
Yeah.
And I think I had, they were the really embarrassing ones, but I've also experienced it where the room they give you is really kind of unfriendly. It looks like something out of, I don't know, you'd go into before a registry office, a couple of chairs and that was it. A little room that you go in to sign the deed. And it was bizarre. One particular, I've forgotten where it was. I can't remember where it was. It might've been Luton. it probably was Luton, to be fair. It was like I could smell the people smoking outside while I was giving the sample.
Yeah, a bit off-putting.
Oh, off-putting's an understatement. It was horrendous. I don't think it was Luton, actually. I think it was Leeds. And I spoke to you about before how Leeds just gave us the wrong vibe. And that was one of the reasons. I'm pretty sure it was. But if there's any people out there, you know, clinics listening to this, please make sure that the men have somewhere comfortable they can give their semen analysis, because it is a really tough thing. I know it's not as intrusive and as painful as egg collection, but it is the male version of it.
It is not the easy bit, as that documentary is titled. It's really not the easy bit, because when there is so much, and I'll say the proper word because it's like less jokey, but when there is so much worry and anxiety around it, it really isn't. And I certainly have experienced every part of that as well that you have. I didn't have the option actually of transporting it to the hospital. And I've heard, because they say, if you do it, like you said, I was always told, get it there within an hour. And you have to try and keep it at body temperature, or as like warm. And I've heard accounts of people putting it either like by their balls anyway, in between their legs, or in their armpit, or even women putting it between their boobs and stuff. But that was never an option for us, because the first place I went to do it was in Cambridge, which was an hour away, because where we lived in Hertfordshire just didn't have facility to do it. And I think I talked about it on episode one, my story, but went into the room with the chaise lounge and I was in such a panic that I forgot to lock the door. I only realized that afterwards when I went to leave. If it was the situation with the old lady, then she would have had to
been straight in, mate. Straight in.
Yeah. So, flipping hell, that the story you mentioned, being in just a normal toilet, that's absolutely mad. Mm. I couldn't even imagine trying to do it.
It was a disabled toilet, so yeah. It was to myself. Oh, but
spacious.
Like, spacious. Yeah, I had room to throw myself about, you know?
Yeah. You could try one of those, strangulation ones, asphyxie wank. Remember, always use a spotter for one of those.
It was too noisy outside for anything like that, mate. You could hear people walking past, like families walking past. And then this old girl and her husband tried to break in.
Yeah, bless them. They all didn't know what was going on inside, eh?
If only they knew, mate. I don't think anyone would have come near that.
After I had those, the initial two in Cambridge, and then I kind of, the result obviously being azoospermia, and then I was very much got thrown into the fertility world. And then I got referred to the UCLH in London, down in Euston. And again, getting a sample there within an hour is not an option, especially not with public transport. And so, but from that point on, I started developing this really weird need. And I know it all comes down to nerves, but so the rooms there are in the basement. Yeah. And firstly, there's no phone signal, so I was a bit stuffed with material. And but also the rooms were like en suite. So you had this little area of chairs in, telly, the magazines, but then there was this toilet like inside the same room. It was really big. So, and I was like, oh, perfect. Because I needed a nervous poo. But then it started to become this like habit that every time I went, I needed this nervous poo first.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I had a few at the UCLH, kind of before I had the varicocele embolization, and then the ones afterwards. And it was the first one after that that I couldn't do, literally, because so much was riding on it. The anxiety was like through the roof. I was in there for about 45 minutes. The room I was in was next to the staff room, so I could hear them all laughing and joking. And obviously my paranoia was telling me that they were laughing and joking about me, because I was in there for so long. And things were starting to chafe, and it was not going to happen. I had to just give up. And then I tried to kind of just give it back to the receptionist on the quiet, on the sly. And she announced to the whole bloody waiting room, there's nothing in there. It's like, yeah, cheers for that. And I literally legged it out. But then I managed to go back and produce that sample, and it was Steel Zero, which was a really crushing moment for us. But then I went up to Bourne Hall, like you just mentioned, and those rooms are upstairs. And I've walked in, and much to my my fright, there was no toilet in there. And I was like, oh, okay, uh-oh. So I've left again, gone past the little reception, and the lady was like, are you okay? I was like, yeah, I just need to go to the toilet. And I obviously learned my lesson after that first time that there was no toilets there, so I went for my nervous poo first. But that became a bit of a routine and a bit of a ritual, really. But clearing out all the pipes. But
if it helps, like, it's important that people get their own little rituals and feel comfortable to do it, because it is so tough. I do have a question for you regarding Bourne Hall. Did you just use the one room, or did you get to use all three of them at some point?
I think I always used the same one because it was always available, and I got a bit funny about kind of like superstition and stuff and routine. And it was as you got upstairs first on the right is what I
always the first of it, the bigger room.
Yeah.
I can't believe we're having a discussion about which room. So the other rooms, they all had different things in them, like different kind of content. Like,
I wish I had experimented now.
Well, there was the 80s room. I remember talking to Jen about. I was like, the 80s room is weird, Jen. And she was like, what do you mean? I said, it's just got loads of videos from the 80s. Literally, it's like DVDs, so like old school. And then there was another one which seemed to have just the kind of really heavy material in it. Let's put it like that.
Yeah.
it was a bit like, nah, I don't need to watch that.
one of my really good friends, he said, and it's always stuck with me because it's just hilarious, but he always says, he's not so much scared of getting caught wanking. It's what he's wanking over. So that sounds like the room for him.
Yeah, that would be his room, mate. It is. It was the first. It was the one at the end of the hall. Like, you know, so you go up, and there was one on the right, and then there was another one, then a little corridor on the left, and then there was another one right at the end of the hall. It was like down the end, down the forbidden land.
Right.
I only went in there once, and then when they asked to get me go in there again, I was like, is there anything else available? I don't really want to go in there.
You've got anything a bit more mainstream?
It just scares me. You can go in this one instead. It was like choosing a room in the Premier Inn or something.
Amazing. No, I stuck to the same one. But then it comes to, you know, it's not easy. It's like you said, it's about that clinics almost not just sticking it in as an afterthought down the corridor, like down the end next to the staff room or whatever. It's creating that environment. But, you know, especially when it comes to operational hospitals, like was it Brighton Hospital you mentioned?
Yeah, Brighton. Yeah,
Brighton. You know, I went to UCLH. So they are main hospitals with A&Es and all sorts of functions. So I do understand that, there's probably a lot of vying for square footage from various different departments. But where possible, it is something that is extremely nerve-wracking.
I think it's also, it's one of the advantages of a private clinic, isn't it? Like, you get that little bit extra care, that little bit extra thought goes into everything. I mean, we were really lucky in terms of we had the majority of our NHS treatment at Bourne, which is a private clinic anyway. But the experiences that I had, say, in the mainstream NHS hospitals were significantly more uncomfortable. I just think the, you know, hospitals and, you know, fertility providers need to think about that, because it is such a nerve-wracking thing.
Yeah, you're right. And you know, it's one thing just doing it, then you've got the anxiety of waiting for the results. And I actually have dug up my first ever result.
Have you?
From the initial test.
I haven't got mine on me. I'll tell you about these Exceed results in a minute, but I'll get mine for next. I'll share them next episode, because they're really interesting, like how it really develops.
Well, I mean, the fact that, you know, this is from 2018, so I still kept it. It's actually in the hidden folder on my phone.
But encrypted.
Yeah, God, there's all sorts in there. But so this is from February 18, and actually, funnily enough, I always thought it was January 18 that I was diagnosed. But hey, that's trauma for you. You know, it's but Yeah. So when you do when you give a sample, they're going to be looking at certain things such as your total count of sperm present, the concentration, the motility, and the morphology. And yeah, my results are absolutely life changing. They don't make good reading even now. But total count 0.0, concentration 0.0, motility 0.0. So yeah, not great. They didn't even bother performing the morphology test because I think by that point it literally says not performed. They're like, yeah. Well, I suppose they got nothing to look at to see if it what it's like. So the only thing I did have a decent result in above the reference range was the volume. So that's actually, and this actually answers a question that a few people have asked in the past, especially of my wife when she tells them her husband has no sperm. Is people say, well, can you still ejaculate? And yes, you can. That is semen. Sperm is obviously what you need to, like, that's the all important stuff. But the fluid that comes out, that's what's measured in volume. And the reference range is anywhere above 1.5. I'm delighted to say I had 2.1. So did all right there. But yeah, I mean, that receiving that phone call was, as I said, life-changing. And you know, being told I had azoospermia, which it says on there, which the poor person who phoned me didn't or couldn't pronounce and was telling me something so drastically life-changing. And that's the way it remained. I must have done, I'd say 12, maybe 15 samples, and every single time the result was the same in many different locations. So this place was up in Cambridge, then down to UCLA, then up to Bourne Hall, again in Cambridge, but different place. But yeah, every time, just constantly getting that same result, 0, 0, 0. It's all across the board. So yeah, not easy. Tough reading. Yeah.
Tough reading, man. I mean, what was your, when you went for inch sample, was there, because guys will be kind of experiencing this, what did you have real hope that it would have changed, or had you already kind of pre-guessed that it wouldn't, or what was your thought process waiting for those results, knowing that previously, say the previous seven have been, you know, zeros?
Obviously the first one was like a massive shock, life-changing, like completely. Then I did the follow-up one 3 months later to confirm it, and I can't remember my feelings going into it, and I can't remember my feelings coming out of it. I remember, like I mentioned on the first episode, I was away for work when that phone call came in. Yeah, it's I'll be guessing if I said how I felt going into that second one. The one that really stands out is that one that I mentioned that I couldn't do following the varicocele embolization, because I had put so much hope into that one that it was going to be a relatively easy fix, like this relatively minor operation was going to have a massive impact. Yes, we would still need IVF, because I was just hoping to get from nothing to something. And yeah, that was the one that there was just so much pressure on. And when it was still zero, that was the most crushing moment, I'd say, probably more so in a different way, but more so than the initial diagnosis, because I was always still hopeful that there would be another way and that we'd find a way around it. And so that's definitely the one that stands out. And after that, it just became a bit routine. I didn't have much hope, especially then going up to Bourne Hall and they wanted to run their own tests and stuff. And I was just like, it just became routine, not attaching any hope to it. And so, yeah, I mean, how about yourself?
Well, in terms of in between each cycle, how did I feel? Very anxious. And each time I distinctly remember each time I gave a sample and said there wasn't improvement, I kind of almost dug the hole a bit deeper. I got sadder. That's the only way to explain it. I got sadder, and the whole thing like affected me more and more and more. I always had that anxiety about it. like about doing it. I always had the fear of almost doing it because I was scared it was going to be the same again. It was a real thing. I distinctly remember those emotions. But then I also remember like the good emotions when we started to address the lifestyle factors. And things started to improve. You know, I remember that. And that's kind of probably what really, along with the counseling that I talked about previously, having those positive emotions suddenly kind of kick in, helped pull me out of the depression I found myself in. But it was always, before then, it was always a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety, and just a lot of hope that I don't know what the word is. I don't know how to describe it. The wish that I didn't have to go through it.
Yeah.
Like it was all a bad dream.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was how I felt each time we went into it. I kind of really just felt empty about it and sad. Especially when those results came. It was just like, oh, fuck, not again.
Yeah, exactly. But then, like you mentioned in the last episode, that you managed to get your account from 1,500 up to 4 million.
Yeah.
And seeing that tangible change from the work that you're putting in, that must have been really and validating as well.
That's where all that positivity came from. You know, suddenly it was like I turned the corner. We still needed ICSI and we were still going to need assistance. But I was like, oh, yeah, it's working. This is something's happening. Yeah, I'm not like breaking records with super sperm, but like they're getting better. Like something's working. So whatever it is, just keep doing it. I mean, like I did an interview and it must have been, I don't know, maybe 2 years ago. And I talked about this, how it went from 1,500 to 4 million. And I was on this interview with, there was a couple of like experts on it. It was like a live thing. It was like a live podcast. I forgot what it was for. But one of the experts like dismissed it, like dismissed the increase. It was like, well, it's still nowhere near where it needs to be. And I remember getting quite angry about it. And I went back at him. I was like, but that's a massive increase. If someone could increase your wage from £1,500 to 4 million a year, you'd be pretty bloody happy. Like, and it's the same with sperm. Like, yes, it's nowhere near where it's meant to be, but the quality and the quantity had increased quite drastically. Yeah. So yeah, it's an interesting way how people look at it.
That's incredible. Like, what a thing to say.
Literally. But I think, you know, I was in the position there where I can just go, mate, I'm not having that. Like, I'm comfortable in my position now. But you can see how professionals can be just so dismissive. And I think we need to discuss this in further detail in another podcast. But how you talk to clients and how you engage specifically with men is vital to keep them on the right track.
Yeah, you know? Definitely. Yeah, when you're dealing with such a fragile emotional and mental state with any kind of subpar fertility diagnosis. But I mean, where are your results now? Like,
where are my results now? So I did the ICSI test, and you know what? Like I said before, if I'd had the option beforehand, like 10 years ago, I would have tried one of these at home just to kind of see what it was all about. So, my total sperm count was 0.31 million, so about 300,000. My volume was good at 3 mil, which was really good for 0.3 mil. Concentration was really poor, so it was below 0.5. 0.5 million per mil. So, you know, it was really low. But I kind of expected that. That was where my issue is all along. progressive motility's increased drastically. So it's gone to 20%, you know. I know, like, this isn't a scientific lab, but it gives us a reasonable like ballpark of where it is, you know, this assessment.
Well, that's just it, you know, like we've mentioned. Imagine having this to hand when we were going through it, because it gives you an idea. And, you know, in my case, it would have led to a very swift trip to the doctors to be like, yeah, this test must be wrong. There's nothing there. But, you know, at least in yours, you would have been a little bit more forearmed and forewarned with the fact that there were going to be overall number issues and motility, for example. So, yeah, it does. It is vital. I mean, and then to know then that interventions you can put in place to increase it as well.
Well, it's all on the app. Like, if I was really looking to like attack a fertility cycle, there's everything I need on there to at least get started, you know. Yeah. And it would have made things a lot less stressful, I mean, it also gives you what it should be at. So, for example, for my sperm motility, I've got 20%. It seemed below normal. So above normal would be 32%. So yeah. I'm not that far off there. Sperm concentration, it should be a 15 and I'm at 0.5. So we won't talk about that one. But it gives me the range, you know. And then for sample volume, 1.5 and I'm at 3. So it shows actually I'm willing the green for that. So that's not a problem. Volume's not a problem for me. Yeah. You know, it's worth mentioning that if anyone does want to try one of these at-home kits, they're available from Xheed at xheedhealth.com. So get on there and use our promotional code of MFP15 for 15% off. I was trying to recall that from the memory then. Can you see that, mate?
Nice.
But we got it. We got it. It's because we're talking about it and it's such a relevant point. It's such a relevant point, and people need to know that these things are out there and they can access it for their comfort and just to kind of gauge where they are. You know, I just wish I'd had that, and then I at least it wouldn't have been such a drastic shock. You know, it could have been that we knew that Jen had her own issues. We could have bought one of these kits and I could have done one and gone, oh, actually, I've got some issues too, rather than just getting it from the bloody consultant's room, which... You know, I've talked enough about that.
Those public toilets. Yeah. But yeah, no, that was an awesome episode, actually, I must say.
Those public toilets, mate.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And, you know, the sperm tests for men are the gateway to all of this. It's either going to send you one way or another, if you know what I mean, kind of be told that everything's okay or actually that it's not, and we need to start looking at other avenues, further tests, and then there's actually more complex things which can be looked at, such as DNA fragmentation, which is definitely worth looking into, even if all your counts across the board are looking kind of normal. But DNA fragmentation is definitely something we didn't touch upon, but is an issue. But a vital vital episode.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, just going back on that DNA fragmentation, that's a completely different, like, well, it's not a different ballpark, but it can be a whole podcast on itself, that one. Mm. And what you can do or what you need to have done, looked into, it's a really fascinating subject and definitely something we should look into. But yeah, man, great conversation, great pod tonight. I've really enjoyed it. Like, you never know where these things are. We do have rough plans, and it's important people know that we kind of have a rough idea what we're going to talk about. But we try and make it as natural as far as possible. And, you know, we get into telling all kinds of little stories, don't we?
Yeah, and come up with new terms for the medical world. Hashtag wanxiety.
Yeah, I think we should push it. I think maybe we should get some, like, T-shirts or something on it.
I think I've got space for a new tattoo somewhere.
Like, just some sperm going in the wrong direction. Like,
that'd be more than I've got in my balls.
But no, man, it's been grand. I suppose it's worth noting and highlighting that, like, our next episode, we're going to be looking at like initial processing and why men don't talk and why or what support is out there for men. Because obviously we've just talked about giving sperm samples and then you get your results. Well, you know, how do you deal with those results and how do you process that? I think that's going to be a fantastic episode and something that we both can bring a lot to the table on, because, you know, we both had a lot to process in two different stories. So that's going to be grand, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And as always, if you want to get in contact with us, it's we're on Instagram at the Male Fertility Podcast, or email.
Oh, you just pointed straight at me, haven't you? Right. It's the malefertilitypodcast@gmail.com. Look at that.
Yeah, nice one.
It's getting smoother.
Lovely. And you've now signed in on the Instagram, haven't you?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have, mate. I'm sorry. It took me ages to do it. I kept getting it and then something would happen. And I was like, I need to find it. And then I had to find it. But I'm on there now.
Excellent. So, top man. Get in contact. You can get a personalized response from Kieran rather than just silly old me.
I'll do it. We need to get a rotor. I'll do Mondays. No. In all seriousness, I'm really touched by it, because I've gone through it the last couple of days and the engagement's been phenomenal. I know you've been doing a lot of hard work, mate, and I really appreciate that. But thank you to everybody as well that has been reaching out. Please continue. Obviously, if you listen to this and you've got some questions on our next topic, please kind of let us know and we'll try and answer them if we can. If we don't get them before we record that, we'll respond to you personally, one-to-one, because that's what we're here to do, aren't we, buddy?
Absolutely. Yeah. Like you said, those messages mean a lot to us. So, thank you for everyone that sent one so far.
Thanks for listening. If this episode has helped you, do us a quick favour and leave us a review. You don't even have to use your real name. Every single review helps another man find this show when he needs it the most. It's honestly the best way you can help the next guy. If you've got a question or something you'd like us to cover on the mailbag, drop us an email at themalefertilitypodcast@gmail.com. We read every message and we love hearing from our listeners. And if you'd like a bit more expert guidance and support from other men on the same journey as you, you're welcome to join our free private community at nexusfertility.com. It's totally confidential and designed just for you by guys that get it. For our latest updates, follow us on social media at the Male Fertility Podcast. And remember, gents, you're not on your own.